accession number 20009, reel 5.
Les Perry, reel 5.
I was in there quite a while, and then I was transferred to an annex at Selston, which is just on the outskirts of Nottingham. I think it must be in between Nottingham and Derby. And that was a more or less a convalescent hospital. I was still in bed. I couldn't walk. And I was in there quite a few weeks, until one day some of the lads were going out, so I said, "Sister, can I go with them, sister?" She said, "Well, you'll have to have crutches." So I said, "Yeah, all right." So I had these crutches, and we went and we got on a bus. With great difficulty, I got on a bus, and with the half dozen other chaps, and we went into Derby, and we went into a pub. And there were some Americans in there. And we was in hospital blues. Now, hospital blues is a blue uniform, a white shirt and a red tie. So one of these Yanks looked at us and says, "Say, buddy, what's the crazy uniforms?" So we said, "Well, we're in hospital." "Well, what are you doing in hospital?" "We've just come back from Normandy. We've been wounded." Well, after that, we didn't buy a drink. And as I say, I wasn't a drinking man, but I had about 3 pints because they kept on insisting, you know, have this. And we went home, and the other blokes, we went in the ward, and I'm standing in the doorway of the ward on these crutches, and I'm rocking backwards and forwards with a silly look on my face. And a sister saw me, she went mad. Anyway, they got me back in bed, and I got a hell of a dressing down over that. She said, "We're trying to get you better." She said, "You could have had a fall. Anything could have happened." She said, "You're so irresponsible, you young lads." So I said, "Well, what can you expect, sister?" She said, "Oh, no, I know." She said, "No, you've got excuses." She said, "But I don't want to hear them." But from there, I was sent out to a convalescent home, the other side of Nottingham, which was at Ruddington Hall. I've been back since, and it's still there, actually. In fact, I think it's the offices of the Blue Circle Cement Company now. But anyway, we were there, and my mother and father came up to see me with my grandmother. And they said, "Got some bad news for you, Les." So I said, "Oh, what's that?" She said, "Well, Billy's been killed." Now, Billy was my sister's boyfriend, and he's in the Navy, and he'd came home on leave, and he'd been killed by a doodle bug. Well, what they really came up to tell me was that my cousin had been killed. Sorry. What they'd really come to do was to tell me that my cousin had been killed. Now, he had volunteered to come, but seeing that I volunteered for a special job, I went to the Suffolk Regiment. He followed the others, and he went to the Dorset Regiment. And he was killed later, on the 3rd of August, going up to Mont Pencon. But as I say, I was in hospital at that time, so I didn't. They didn't tell me. And after a few weeks, I got a bit better, and they sent me to a convalescent depot, an army physical training convalescent depot up at Halifax, which is up in the hills on the outskirts of Halifax. The idea there is to get you fit to send you back. Well, I was just hobbling by the time I got there. I couldn't walk properly. And they put us on PT kit and boots, and they took us out a long way, and they said, "Right, you've got to get back now." Well, I just couldn't get back. I'm walking along, hobbling along, and a car pulls up. There's an officer sitting there. He said, "What are you doing, lad?" I said, "I'm on the march, sir." I said, "But I've had to drop out." I said, "I can't keep up." He said, "Why can't you keep up?" I just turned and showed him my leg. My God, he said, what are you doing on a march? So I said, well, I said, trying to get me fit, sir. So he said, what grade are you at the moment? I said, B2. So he said, all right, jump in. So I got in the front with the driver, got to the gate, and the PT instructor standing there, waiting for, you know, stragglers to come in. And this officer got out, he said, did you put this man on the march? I said, yes, sir. He said, it's my job to try to get him fit. He said, he can hardly walk. He said, he needs to see the MO. So anyway, that went off. And I was given a job because I couldn't go on these parades and what have you, because of, you know, the leg wouldn't allow me to do it. I got a letter one day that I'd written to my cousin. And it got address unknown, return to sender. So they'd opened it, and they got my address, and they'd readdressed it, and it was sent back to me. So I'm walking along the camp, and the sergeant major came down the road, and he looked at me, he says, you all right, lad? He says, you look upset. I said, I can't understand it, sir. I said, I wrote to my cousin in France. I said, and it's been sent, address unknown. I said, I know that it's right, it's his name and his unit. I said, I know I haven't made a mistake. He said, come into the office, boy. So I went in the office. I said, right, sit down there. So he said, now you know what this is, don't you? So I said, no, sir. He said, well, your cousin's been killed. He said, and this, they always send it back to sender. So I said, oh. So he said, right, you all right, lad? So I said, yes, sir. So he said, right, go on then, where you go? So by that time, I'd been given the job of stoking the boilers. He'd give you anything to, you know, occupy your mind sort of thing. Well, I went in the boiler room and I sat down and I cried my eyes out. And even today, I can't help it, even today, I still get upset if I think about him. I mean, I went back... when was it? 42 years after Normandy, and I went to his grave, and I had my wife, my daughter's son-in-law, and four children with me, and I was walking along, and I saw his name on a headstone, and I just broke down. I said, I'm sorry, Wilf, I'm sorry, I'm crying. And my granddaughter said, Mum, Granddad's crying. So she said, leave him alone, he'll be all right in a minute. And I was sobbing. And she came up, she put her arm around my shoulder. She said, come on, Dad. So I even today, I still can't get over it. Every time I go there, and I go every year, and I go to his grave, and I still shed a tear. Not as I did that time. But I went round the back of the shelter. They're sheltering all these cemeteries. I went round the back and I absolutely broke down. I sank on my knees and I sobbed. And I still maintain that was my fault, because he said that he would look after me. And he went back and volunteered because he wanted to come and look after me. Because he was just like a big brother to me. He was 4 years older, and he always, living in the same house for the first 7 years of our life, of my life, we got very close, and we were just like brothers. I idolised him, and I've often said to my wife, even now, I've got it on film, and I said it for the BBC, that I still think that it should be me out there, and he came home, because he was such a marvellous man. He was a good sportsman. He was a smashing likeable fella. Everybody loved him, and I always feel that it was my fault that he was killed, and I still put myself down over it, because when I went to Normandy, I was a regimental signaller, as I've said, and my job was communication. And I've always said that if anything happened to Wilf, I would volunteer to go back and get my revenge. But I didn't, because I'd been wounded. I was in a bit of a state myself. I was downgraded to C2. And to be honest, I was frightened to go back. I'll admit it, I was frightened to go back. And I've always felt, ever since the war, that I was a coward because I didn't go back. But there again, would they have let me be in C2? I was downgraded and passed unfit for active service. And I felt at the time, and I still do at times, my wife tells me off something rotten, but I still feel responsible in one way. It might be stupid, it probably is. If I was to tell any of my mates in the Normandy Veterans Association, they would say I was stupid. I did the job that I was sent out there to do, and I did everything that was asked of me. What more could I have done? I was wounded, I was downgraded to C2. The next grade is discharge, but they told me, when I went in front of the board, they said, the next grade is discharge, but we can't send you back, we can't release you to go home, because the doodlebugs and the V2s are dropping on London, and it wouldn't help your recovery, you'd only get worse. So we're going to keep you in the army, and you're going to do light duties, and you are a signaller. So they did just that, but they couldn't give me a worse job, because they put me on guard in German prisoners. And I hated them, and I still do. People talk about reconciliation. Not me. No way. They said last year, even the British Legion said that we should stop calling it remembrance and call it reconciliation parade. And the Germans would like to march down Whitehall side by side with British. I said, I'll never do that. Never. I'd never march down Whitehall side by side with the Germans.
Where was this POW camp?
Where was it? Well, first of all, I was sent down to Chepstow, which we had a prisoner war camp on Chepstow Racecourse. But I was being with the headquarter company, we were in a big house in Chepstow town itself. And then from there, I was sent to another one. Where was it? Can't think where it was. 284 German prison war camp, which was in South Wales anyway. And there was a football match going on. And one of the blokes said, there's a big draft going out, did you know? So I said, no. I said, where's it going? He said, it's going to Clay Cross. So I said, Clay Cross, where's that? He said, it's just outside London. He said, there's a draft going out at Clay Cross. So I said, where's that then? They said, it's near London. So I said, oh, I'll have some of that. So I went up and I said to Sergeant Major, it's a draft going out, is that right, sir? So he said, yes. I said, could I get on it? He said, aren't you the lad that's C2, excuse parades? I said, yes, sir. He said, yeah, of course you can go on it. So we got on the train, and we're going through Birmingham. I said to one of the lads, I said, we're going through Birmingham. I said, that's not the way to London. He said, no, Clay Cross is in Derbyshire. I said, I thought it was just outside London. It just shows how naive we were in those days. No, he said, it's just it's in Derbyshire. So, of course, I went up there, and from there I was demobbed. I was demobbed in 1947, beginning of August, 47. But
did your hatred of the Germans, was it because of your cousin or because of your own wounding or what?
No, I think it was because of my cousin. Because as I understand it, his mother was told that he was they were surrounded by tanks, and the whole company surrendered except he and a sergeant were on the edge of the field, and they tried to get away, and this tank commander saw him and swung the gun round and shot them down.
How do you feel now about having served in Normandy in the Second World War?
I feel very proud that I did. I didn't do a lot. I wasn't there very long. But I feel very proud for the little bit that I did do. And I feel very proud that I landed on D-Day. Because I've had it said to me, even now, one of our chaps from Normandy Veterans, he was in the Guards Armoured Division, and he said, "I've got nothing but praise for you blokes that landed on D-Day." He said, "Because you held back the Germans while we consolidated." He said, "And if you blokes hadn't have held them back," he said, "we would never have done it."
Have you fully recovered from your injuries?
I like to think so, but I do get very bad mood swings. I still get violent headaches. I still dream. I wake up every morning, nearly every morning, about 4 o'clock, and my mind goes straight back to Normandy. I wish I could stop it, but I can't. I wish that I could put it out of my mind, but I can't. And I look at those headstones, and I look at the names, and they were all my mates. And I think to myself, all there is now is a bundle of bones. And my grandchildren came, and they said, "Granddad, but look at their names, look at their ages. They're our age. We was that age." I said, "Yeah." I said, "We were only boys." I said, "But that's it, that is war."
I think you told me earlier off the record that you were asked to seek psychiatric treatment after the war.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I went to the Ministry of Pensions used to test you. You go in front of two or three doctors about every 6 months. Because when I came out, I got a 20% pension. I didn't ask for it. They just sent it automatic. They sent me what they call a King's Badge, which is a little round silver badge which they give to people that are disabled, disabled out. And I was put on a disabled register for work. And I went up to London for this assessment. And the doctor said, "Do you lose any time from work?" So I said, "No." "Well, you just told us you were in pain. You get a lot of pain from it." I said, "Yeah, I do." "Well, why don't you time off from work?" I said, "I can't afford to have time off from work. I'm married, I've got two young kids." I said, "I can't afford to have time off from work." So he said, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "I go to work and I suffer." I said, "I have to put up with it." So, and then he said, "These headaches and these nightmares that you have." So I said, "Yeah. Have you seen anybody?" So I said, "No." So he said, "Well, we're going to send you to see a psychiatrist." So I got a letter through to go down to a clinic in Dagenham. And I went down and I saw the psychiatrist. But so all he was interested in was my sex life. He wasn't interested in the headaches that I got, the way that I feel, the dreams, the blackouts. He wasn't interested in any of that. All he was interested in was my sex life. And I said to him, "What the hell's that got to do with the way I feel?" So he said, "Oh, it would have a strong bearing on it." He said, "If you had a poor sex life..." I said, "Well," I said, "there's nothing wrong." But because of that, and of course I was living with my parents, with two kids in one room, they wrote to Barking Council, the Minister of Pensions wrote to Barking Council, and I got a letter from Barking Council asking me to go and see the housing officer. And I went to see him, and he said, we've got a letter here from the Minister of Pensions saying that your cramped housing conditions are impeding your health, or impeding your recovery. We can offer you a new flat. Well, I was working on the flats at the time, and I knew what they were. And he said, but the bad news is they're 35 shillings a week. Well, I think I was earning about £7 a week then. And I said, well, can I think about it? So he says, yes. So I came home and I saw my father. And I said, what do you think, Dad? So he said, well, 35 shillings, a lot of money, boy, he said. He said, but take it. He said, you'll make yourself afford it. He said, you'll manage. You'll get by. He said, you'll do it. So I did. And we got this flat. The woman next door didn't like it very much because her son-in-law had been in the artillery on the guns in Barking Park, and he was living in one room with his wife. And because he didn't get a council flat, she went there and went to the council and complained. But that's the way people are, I'm afraid. But I don't know many people that did get counselling or did see a psychiatrist.
Did he prescribe treatment or medicine?
No, just the tablets, the phenobarbitone. And I think they were just a mild drug because they were habit forming, and I think they were just a mild drug to sort of calm me down. I think that's what it was more than anything.
Can I ask you about how accurate you think your memories are?
I would say that without fear of contradiction, I would say that I was 98% accurate. My memory is so clear of that time. My memory is so clear of that time that I don't think I could ever forget it. There might be small reminiscences after the war, maybe, about things, but in the main, the actual active service experience and the leading up to it is as clear in my mind as if it happened yesterday.